Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Let's not waste any time here. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Simon and Garfunkel, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme.
Ah.
Okay. Simon and Garfunkel's first masterpiece, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme, was also the first album on which the duo, in tandem with engineer Roy Haley, exerted total control from beginning to end, right down to the mixing, and it was an achievement akin to the Beatles' Revolver or the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. And just as personal and pointed as either of those records at their respective bests. After the frantic rush to put together an LP in just 3 weeks that characterized the Sound of Silence album early in 1966, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme came together over a longer gestation period of about 3 months, an uncommonly extended period of recording in those days, but it gave the duo a chance to develop and shape the songs the way they wanted them. The album opens with one of the last vestiges of Paul Simon's stay in England, Scarborough Fair/Canticle. The latter was the duo's adaptation of a centuries-old English folk song in an arrangement that Simon had learned from Martin Carthy. The two transformed the song into a daunting achievement in the studio, however, incorporating a myriad vocal overdubs and utilizing a harpsichord among other instruments to embellish it, and also wove into its structure Simon's The Side of a Hill, a gentle anti-war song that had previously recorded on the Paul Simon songbook in England. The sonic results were startling on their face, a record that was every bit as challenging in its way as Good Vibrations, but the subliminal effect was even more profound. Mixing a hauntingly beautiful antique melody and a song about love in a peaceful domestic setting with a message about war and death, Simon and Garfunkel were never as political as, say, Peter, Paul, and Mary or Joan Baez, but on this record they did bring the Vietnam War home. So this was released on October 24th, 1966 on Columbia Records. It was produced by Bob Johnston. Side A starts with Scarborough Fair slash Canticle and ends with the 59th Bridge song. So if you're listening along, that's where we'll stop halfway through the album and discuss it. Okay, so let's start the album off with Scarborough Fair slash Canticle.
Okay.
All right, ending side one there with the 59th bridge song, and in brackets, feeling groovy. I'm always impressed when I hear Simon and Garfunkel, and just the not only the lyrics, but the vocal harmonies that they managed to get just out of two people is pretty astounding.
Yeah, they could sound almost like a small choir.
Yeah.
But it's just the two of them. Very talented vocalists, for sure. I'm actually enjoying sort of the mix of styles that they're putting forth on this album. It's pretty cool. It's another great album from 66. So
yeah, there seemed to be a pretty, you know, good period there in the mid-60s where all these really popular artists, pop artists, folk artists, whatever you want to say, were putting out some of their best work. You obviously had the Beatles with Rubber Soul and Revolver. You had Simon and Garfunkel with this album. And then you had the Beach Boys with Pet Sounds. And then I think the Rolling Stones started to come into their own. And so you just had this really prolific period of pop music that was really interesting, you know. But yeah, you're right. This album is really, it's funny. It's like they're going through a whole bunch of styles, but it's still somehow them, and it all works together. Like, I don't feel like going from one song to the next that the next song doesn't make sense. You know, it may be a different style, a different feel, but it still makes it, like, it's not jarring.
It's still a cohesive whole. It's an album. It's a proper album. Not necessarily a concept album. It is an album.
Yeah, you're right. It's not an album that, like, tells a story or has a narrative. It's not Tommy, you know. So it is a collection of songs, but like the description was saying, like, they were conscious of making an album, not just a collection of songs. They were, you know, and they had for the first time, they had total control with the help of the producer and sort of really making their own decisions and what kind of music they want to make, what kind of sounds they want, what instruments they want. And this is really them not just becoming a folk duo, but really becoming artists and record makers. I was just looking at some of the people who played on this, and I'm not surprised. It's a lot of the people that they refer to as the Wrecking Crew. So Hal Blaine is on drums. Joe South is on guitar. Carol Kay plays bass on Scarborough Fair and Homeward Bound. And so you have all these really cool, then these are session musicians that played on a lot of pop music from the 60s. Like Hal Blaine, I think, is played on everybody's album. He's the drummer for everybody's album, I think, from the 60s.
Yeah. And Carol Kay on bass seems to be, she's everywhere too.
Yeah. What I, first talking about specific songs, like for the first song, Scarborough Fair, I found myself really getting lost in the vocals. It's a song that I had heard before. Like a lot of these songs, like I am familiar with a lot of these songs. I'm not familiar with the whole album, but I'm familiar with the singles that were released from the album. And so Scarborough Fair is a song that I had heard before, but I never really got into it. I don't know if I just kind of thought it was kind of boring, and I guess it's that sort of almost Baroque pop sound that it has, and it's sort of like that that sound. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. It's like Greensleeves or something like that. It's like this, you know, Irish folk song from the medieval times or something. Like it has that sort of feel to it. Very, you know, almost like I can see really overcast skies and just this sort of cold feeling when I listen to it. It's just the way that it sounds. But I found myself, because I'm forced to really hear it, I really found myself towards the end of the song getting really lost in the vocals and the vocal harmonies and the overdubs. because they were saying very specific phrases, but I couldn't really make out exactly what they were saying, which I think was the point. They were trying to, you know, make this sort of wash of voices just come over and take over the whole mix, really. It's like it took over everything. And then it, you know, towards the end of the song, it sort of, you know, calmed down a little bit. But I found myself really, it's like, wow, this is really kind of psychedelic in a way, and but not too weird. It was just kind of perfect. And so that really made me appreciate the song more in a way that I hadn't before.
Yeah, like you were saying just before, is this, some of these songs I am familiar with, like Scarborough Fair and Homeward Bound and the 59th Street Bridge song or Feeling Groovy. I was not familiar with, I enjoyed, but I was not familiar with Patterns or the Big Bright Green Pleasure Machine, which I thought were kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, those were really cool, just fun pop songs. And again, they're just mixed in there with the other songs, and they just fit really well for some reason, you know? It's just, they just work.
Big Bright Green Pleasure Machine. Yeah, you could definitely hear the psychedelia coming in a little bit. Again, they never went as far as, say, you know, Jimi Hendrix would, or some of the really obscure guys out there would do, or like, I don't know, the 13th Floor Elevators or something like that. But it definitely got one of those denser titles that's just a little on the weird side.
I have a feeling they're talking about, this is my own interpretation, but I have a feeling they might be talking about television. Because in the 60s, television was really starting to become very common. In a way that, like, say, the internet had been in, like, the 2000s. You know, and there's sort of a parallel there. And so I think there's sort of a, you know, I could be totally wrong that that's what they're talking about. They could be talking about the record. I think they might be just talking about entertainment in general, really.
Could be.
Yeah. You know? But yeah, that was a really cool, the sound of that song was really cool. And it was a faster song. And so it really actually, because it was a faster song, it really came in at the right time. It really picked things up. So the sequencing on this album and the choices that they're making of where to place each song, that's actually something that I feel is like a lost art in deciding what order to put the songs. But I feel like that really comes in at the right time when you're listening to the album, because it just picks everything up, and you know, okay, it's a fast song now. I can, you know, carry on. Just when maybe the energy is starting to dip a little bit, it just sort of, you know, picks everything up.
Yeah, I've noticed there's been a few albums where I thought they ran out of gas out of the towards the end of the album, and I'm thinking, I think they could have mixed their upbeat songs a little bit further down into the list of other things and take the energy out of you by the time the album's wrapping up. So
yeah, I guess we'll move on to the next side, or the side two, and it starts with The Dangling Conversation. Here we go. Okay, ending the album on a pretty heavy note there with Silent Night and the 7 o'clock news, which was Silent Night, the traditional, I guess it's a Christmas carol, with someone reading the news of the day, which all were negative stories.
And this was 66. Things were about to get a little darker.
Yeah, the next 2 years are going to be pretty wild, and I think 68 was probably the worst, at least in the States.
Yeah,
this was 2 years before that, so yeah, it's just starting. You know, that was interesting, because the description of the album said it wasn't very political, but I guess, you know, that wasn't really that political. It was just sort of like, here's what's happening right now. And then sort of the counterpoint to this really peaceful sort of song and just sort of putting that against each other. It was interesting just to sort of say, hey, you know, I know all this stuff. I know all this stuff is happening, but it's probably going to be okay.
Yeah, they were definitely going for a juxtaposition there between, you know, the what was on the news and then current affairs and stuff like that, and between the probably one of the most peaceful, sort of quiety songs, you know, ever written. It's just, you know, I like the Dylan-esque, a simple, desultory Philpic, or how I was Robert McNamara into submission. It's also a very Bob Dylan title. Again, sort of psychedelic.
It that was a really cool song with the fuzz guitar and just sort of a. It sounded like a Dylan song, like that mid-60s Dylan sound with the organ. After Dylan went electric, yeah, that was cool. And then the song before that too, Flowers Had Never Been With the Rainfall. I feel like some of his vocal delivery was sort of a little bit Dylan too. There was some, the way he was singing was like this sort of fast, sort of rhyming each word kind of thing that Dylan would do in the 60s. He was doing a little bit of that in Flowers Never Been With the Rainfall as well. And yeah, this is an interesting album. Very interesting album. I to be honest, when it came up on the album generator, I was not disappointed, but it's like, oh, this is going to be an album. Like, I don't think I was quite in the mood. And I was like,
gotcha.
Oh, this is going to be an album of slow songs. It's going to be a drag to get through. Not that I don't appreciate it, but I'm just not in the mood to listen to that kind of thing right now.
Yeah, sometimes we'd like to be given something a little more upbeat from this thing sometimes.
Yeah, this one seems a little more more eclectic. It's more, not only eclectic, it really mixes it up. It's, they're treating each song, like what I found with this album is each song was different from the last, but they're treating each song as an individual piece in the sense that they are making choices that fit that song specifically. Whereas I feel like a lot of albums, they're going for a sound for the whole album. And it seems like some of the songs suffer because things would have been cool if they added something or if they didn't have something, but because it fits the sound of the whole album, they compromise the song to go for the sound of the album. Whereas I feel like this, they're treating each song individually and they're making choices that fit each song. Like, you know, like the Dylan song, the desultory
Philpic.
Yes, that one. I feel like, you know, they had like the electric guitar, the fuzz guitar, and the organ, and they made those choices specifically to fit that song. Whereas if they had done that on, say, Homeward Bound, it might have been cool, but it wouldn't have quite fit the song. So I feel like they're really conscious of, okay, what's right for this song that we're doing right now? But at the same time, the way they've sequenced the album is each song fits in with the last, and there's no curveballs, and there's no, you know, there's no surprises, really. There's different things to keep you interested, but there's nothing feels off or out of place, which is almost impossible to do.
It's definitely a delicate balancing act. I find you're generally pretty safe. I mean, people make a conscious effort to make an album sort of sound the same, and sometimes that's cool. Sometimes it works for, you know, depending on what they're doing, especially on a concept album. From my experience, it works more like with, like, you know, your prog and proto metal bands and stuff like that. They had a tendency to do that, but you're going to sort of sound like you at that period no matter what you do, so you might as well mix it up a little bit, and it's still going to be a snapshot of you at that time, and you know, later on, you're probably going to sound a little different anyway. So yeah. By the time that next album comes about, yeah, it's I wouldn't fret too much about it. Like a lot of these really classic albums, I don't think some of them were literally just, you know, almost like a compilation of just stuff that they were doing in the studio to put together. I mean, obviously this one, they actually sat down to do an album as they were describing because they had full creative control over it. But yeah, there's lots of other classic albums out there that are basically just made up of what they were doing in the studios over a certain amount of time, and then they just sort of assembled it into an album to put it out, you know, including the single, or sometimes without the single.
Yeah, and I also feel that, you know, they're not doing, you know, they're not trying to sound like Cream, you know, they're doing what they do. You know, and so they're not, you know, they're not trying to fit into, like, they don't have the record company breathing down their neck saying, oh, you need to sound like this because we'll sell more albums because you'll, you know, you need to, you know, put, you know, big electric guitars on your album because that's really hot right now. And, you know, they don't have that pressure. So they're staying true to themselves.
Folk music was really popular in the early 60s, and so I think there was still a lot of freedom for folk artists to kind of do that thing through the mid and late 60s, and some of them, like Simon Garfunkel, I don't think they had any trouble selling these albums.
No, not at all. But what I'm saying is they're not trying to be something they're not, right? Whereas I feel maybe a little later, a lot of artists are trying to do that,
especially towards the 80s when everybody was told to suddenly accept the, you know, the Roland DX7 as God, and bands that have absolutely no business using them were forced to use them.
And in the right context it can sound good, but not
no, it's true, it's got its place,
but you know, not everybody has to use it. Sometimes it doesn't fit. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, I was really pleasantly surprised with this album. I want to sort of start having like a new, like a rating system, or so to sort of wrap up the episode. So I guess kind of the way we would say, like, I guess the question would be like, would you listen to this again? So wrap the episode up. Would you listen to this again?
Yes. Oh, I would. This is a definite put it on again.
Yes. Me too. Yeah, I would absolutely put this on again. And I don't think I would put it in my music collection and listen to it on shuffle. I think I might need to listen to the whole album. You know, some of the songs maybe, but I think I would need to listen to the whole album again rather than, you know, put on different ones. So yes, it's a yes from me as well. So we will end the show there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, you can check us out on polyphonicpress.com. You can drop us a line there. Just go to the contact page. You can fill out the email thing and just, you know, let us know, say hi, and just, you know, let us know how you like the show or if you don't like the show. And yeah, you can help us out on Patreon as well. If you want to do that, you can, yeah, there's lots of cool perks there. You'll get early access to these episodes. You can get a shout out at the end of each episode. So there's lots of cool stuff there. And I think that's about it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.